I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday was day four of the House Committee investigation into the January 6 attack on the U.S. Capitol. It was about the relentless pressure by former President Trump and his allies to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election based on a series of lies and dubious, if not illegal, procedures. It was disturbing and frankly infuriating to hear the witnesses, three election officials and two election workers from Georgia and Arizona, describe in vivid detail the campaign of intimidation they endured. Trump singled out those election workers, Wandrea Shea Moss and her mother, Ruby Freeman, by name. They faced an onslaught of hateful racist threats from Trump and his supporters. Moss described a group of protesters pushing their way into her grandmother's house, looking to make a citizen's arrest. The FBI told Freeman to leave her home for her own safety. Here's what she told the committee at the conclusion of yesterday's hearing.
There is nowhere I feel safe. Nowhere. Do you know how it feels to have the President of the United States to target you? The President of the United States is supposed to represent every American, not to target one. But he targeted me, Lady Ruby, a small business owner, a mother, a proud American citizen who stand up to help Fulton County run an election in the middle of the pandemic.
The committee also detailed how the Trump campaign orchestrated a scheme of fake electors, including from Pennsylvania, to subvert the orderly transfer of power. Didn't work, but it did expose the vulnerabilities of our electoral system. We have two guests who have joined us. Wendy Weiser is Vice President for Democracy at the Brennan Center for Justice at the New York University School of Law. She founded and directed the program's Voting Rights and Elections Project. Wendy Weiser, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us, Kyle Chaney, senior legal affairs reporter for Politico, with a focus on the aftermath of the January 6th insurrection. Kyle Chaney, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good to be here.
You know, hearing Ruby Freeman talk about being targeted by the president, it's just so upsetting. And I wonder, Wendy, if you could talk a little bit about what it was like for you to watch the hearings yesterday and knowing that in this country, Black Americans have had to endure and sacrifice so much for the right to vote. And here are these two women who were targeted by the president and had to endure just the most hateful and horrifying kind of harassment.
I mean, you put it well. It was both heartbreaking and infuriating. I mean, that these patriots who are standing up to uphold our election in the midst of a pandemic were targeted from the most powerful person in the country, in the world, for harassment, and now are paying an ongoing price is really just, you know, something that should not happen anywhere and certainly not in America. And sadly, this is obviously an extreme example, but we are seeing similar ongoing effects of harassment for election workers across America. Like this is an ongoing problem right now.
And, Kyle, I'm thinking just, what it must be like for those two women, but also the three state officials who testified yesterday, the amount of, Twitter traffic that is now aimed at them, or emails or phone calls or threats, just because they testified before the committee, the House committee.
Right. I think anyone who appears before this panel is going to be singled out as in target. I think they know that going in, that they're going to draw the same sort of vitriol that we saw, in the January 6th period. And just to build on that point too, what's particularly infuriating about all of it is it was all built on false information about, voter fraud, these claims of people misinterpreting what happened in surveillance videos while people were counting votes, and it was all incorrect. And even when it was revealed to be incorrect, you still had the President of the United States targeting these people with the false claims long after they were debunked.
Well, he's still doing it today, is he not? Lying about the election results, Kyle?
Yes, and that's part of the committee's point here. This didn't end with January 6th, didn't end with Trump leaving office. This is an ongoing issue. These vulnerabilities have not been patched or reformed in any way yet, and that's part of their mission. But this has not been in any way a historic issue. It's something that we're dealing with in the present.
Let me play another clip, and this is you'll hear Representative Adam Schiff talking to Georgia election worker Shay Moss about the impact of the false claims against her and her mother. Let's give it a listen, and then we'll talk about it.
Ms. Moss, how has this experience of being targeted by the former president and his allies affected your life?
It's turned my life upside down. I no longer give out my business card. I don't transfer calls. I don't want anyone knowing my name. I don't want to go anywhere with my mom because she might yell my name out over the grocery aisle or something. I don't go to the grocery store at all. I haven't been anywhere at all. I've gained about 60 pounds. I just don't do nothing anymore. I don't want to go anywhere. I second guess everything that I do. It's affecting my life in a major way, in every way, all because of lies. For me doing my job, same thing I've been doing forever.
And Wendy, this was a job that she had for 10 years. She talked about, you know, the joy that she felt helping people register to vote and making sure they got the correct information. And, you know, here's a woman that essentially had to give up her job. And as you mentioned, this might be an extreme example, but nonetheless, it's happening across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that joy in doing this job is something that election officials across the country report and still report. But those threats, even where the president himself hasn't singled people out, are spreading. We've had 1 in 6 local election officials that we surveyed actually have received threats to their lives or their family members' lives. Yeah. 60% are worried that this is making it harder for them to recruit and retain election officials, and virtually all of them have seen the threat environment increase. This is not just a human tragedy, which it certainly is, but it is also really worrisome for our ability to recruit and retain talented election workers and to run fair elections if people feel like they're going to be harassed and intimidated. This is really causing ongoing damage today to our election system.
Kyle, we're going to play a clip from Rusty Bauer. This is Arizona's Republican House Speaker. But before we play the clip, and this is where he talks about the kind of pressure that he was under to overturn the results of his election in Arizona, something he did not do. But help us understand who Rusty Bauer is.
Sure. So he's the Speaker of the House in Arizona and someone who Trump and his team turned to when they were trying to legitimize some of their claims of fraud and something that they could use to justify replacing Joe Biden's electors with Donald Trump's electors, even though he'd lost the state of Arizona. And so Rusty Bauer, veteran Arizona political hand, you know, and someone who by many accounts is respected even on both sides of the aisle, as a fairly mainstream Republican, and so his resistance to Trump's pressure became a very important moment for the committee to highlight.
Well, here again, this is Arizona's Republican House Speaker Rusty Bauer. He's testifying yesterday about the repeated pressure on him to overturn the results. Never saw any evidence of fraud.
There was no evidence being presented of any strength. Evidence can be hearsay evidence. It's still evidence, but it's still hearsay. But strong judicial quality evidence, anything that would say to me, you have a doubt, deny your oath. I will not do that. And on more than one occasion throughout all this, that has been brought up, and it is a tenet of my faith that the Constitution is divinely inspired of my most basic foundational beliefs. And so for me to do that because somebody just asked me to is foreign to my very being. I will not do it.
And Wendy, again, a very, you know, a very emotional testimony from the Arizona House, Speaker of the House. He did say, he described several conversations with Rudy Giuliani and others, Jenna Ellis, saying, give me the evidence. If we've got dead people voting, if we've got undocumented people voting, then give me the evidence. They never gave him the evidence. What do we take from Bauer's testimony?
Well, there are a couple of important things. First, not only did they not give him the evidence, he testified that Rudy Giuliani actually told him, we've got lots of theories, we just don't have the evidence. So there actually was no evidence. We heard that early on in the earlier hearings that President Trump and his chief campaign operatives all knew that their claims of stolen election and voter fraud were false. Here they're admitting it in connection with this specific attempt to overturn the election result in Arizona. So there was no evidence. There was also a fair amount of evidence presented that they actually not only knew there was no evidence that this was false, they also knew that this was unlawful. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to point out is that, you know, the importance of public officials of conscience that upheld their oath and did their duty. And we're seeing this across the board in the hearings. The attempts to overturn the election system were thwarted by public officials who withstood this campaign of pressure and intimidation and did their duty amidst increasing difficult pressure and circumstances. And you know, my worry is that those safeguards are being eroded right now, that there are people being put in these positions that are election deniers or who might not be as committed to upholding their oath of office, and that some of the legal safeguards that were in place that helped thwart this effort to overturn the election are also being undermined at the state level. But we do see across the board public officials of conscience stepping in and, you know, upholding our democracy.
We owe
them a debt of gratitude.
Indeed, we do. We have to take a very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow, and we're talking about what we learned at the fourth day of the January 6th House Committee hearing yesterday about the intimidation of state election officials, about the intimidation of workers for doing their jobs. We'll also be talking about the attempt to use fake electors to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election and what all this means going forward as we think about the future and strength of our democracy. Wendy Weiser is Vice President for Democracy at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law. Kyle Chaney, Senior Legal Affairs Reporter for Politico, with a focus on the aftermath of the January 6th insurrection. And you can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can always call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Cal, let me pick up with you with what Wendy was saying before the election, which in a sense the system did hold. We've got these Republican state officials who refuse to do the bidding of Trump and his allies. But nonetheless, it certainly does expose some of the fragility of our system. Take us sort of inside how you see our system working in the face of this level of threat and onslaught.
Sure. Well, and as I mentioned, the Select Committee's mission in part is to, and actually large part, is to come up with policy changes to prevent the system from being exploited in the future. But I think you're right. I think one of the things this entire episode highlighted is the fact that, look, these systems is the Electoral Count Act, which of 1887, which governs the way electors are counted, the way states certify their votes, the way electors are chosen and submitted to Washington, and to Congress. You know, those are processes that have rarely been strained or tested since that time. It's been fairly routine. And so there hasn't really been a need to focus on, is there a way for these things to be exploited, for loopholes to be, used to try to prevent the transition of power. And so, you know, as with many things with Donald Trump, he tested these processes in ways that have never been done before. And I think it exposed the way they could be misused, the way vague language in the Electoral Count Act, vague language in the Constitution can be exploited by bad actors. You know, and Trump surrounded himself with people like attorney John Eastman, who were willing to craft legal theories, fringe legal theories, that would sort of justify it or put a legitimate sheen on what they were trying to do. And that's why the committee, feels so important. So important to highlight those.
Well, and is it not that this is going to happen, but is this an argument to get rid of the Electoral College, Kyle? Again, it's not going to happen, but nonetheless, it does. It that the system that we have has some loopholes that can be exploited.
I mean, the abolishing the Electoral College is something that I think you hear people like Jamie Raskin, a member of the Select Committee, say he favors. I don't think that's going to get broad buy-in from the full committee, especially you have Republicans on there who would certainly not be in favor of that. But I think that's one way, one potential proposal to address some of these loopholes. Yes, the Electoral College is where a lot of the malfeasance sort of centered around in the post 2020 election period, but there are other ways in terms of just even the joint session of Congress, the way states certify their votes that I think the committee wants to shore up as well.
And I wonder to you, Wendy Weiser, about the John R. Lewis Act. I mean, there is legislation in Congress to address, if not all, but certainly some of the vulnerabilities in our electoral system. And one of the things that you have written is just how this allegation of voter fraud has really undermined our system, even though is infinitesimal evidence of any kind of voter fraud.
Well, that's absolutely true. And again, those who were making the allegations were learning that they too knew and were told and understood that this was false. But if we look at the vulnerabilities of the system that we're learning through this plot to overturn the 2020 election, the Electoral College is certainly part of it, and the Electoral Count Act is one of the things that I think the committee is looking at shoring up. But it is not the entirety of it. For example, the ongoing threats to election officials and public officials, that is ongoing. That is not going to be solved by the Electoral Count Act. That they need to be protected. We need to have stronger safeguards for them in our system. We also saw attempts to cause public officials to change election results or change election rules. The phone call to Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger had nothing to do with the Electoral Count Act.
No, it didn't.
Finding 12,000 votes would be something. You know, we need to have stronger legal safeguards against efforts to sabotage elections, against efforts to interfere with the vote count and with the voting process. And that is a lot of what was in the Freedom to Vote John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Another piece that we see here is that, and this didn't come up as much in today's hearing, in yesterday's hearing, but it has been throughout, that a lot of the attempts to overturn the votes were targeting the votes cast by voters of color. And those were the votes that were being flagged or falsely as being somehow suspicious or fraudulent. Those were the, and that is also why it's critical to restore the protections of the Voting Rights Act against discrimination in the voting system. So we're seeing a need for broader safeguards across the board. All of these vulnerabilities in our system were being exploited and now have been exposed, and they need to be shored up, or we're going to keep on facing these kinds of threats.
Let me play another clip, and this is from Pennsylvania House Speaker Republican Ryan Cutler testifying in video about efforts the Trump campaign and supporters went to and the harassment and threats to pressure him to overturn the election results.
On December 30th, Trump ally Steve Bannon announced a protest at Cutler's home.
We're getting on the road and we're going down to Cutler. We're going to start going to offices, and if we have to, we're going to go to homes and we're going to let them know what we think about them.
There were multiple protests. I actually don't remember the exact number. There was at least three, I think, outside either my district office or my home. And you're correct. My son, my then 15-year-old son, was home by himself for the first one. All of my personal information was doxed online. It was my personal email, my personal cell phone, my home phone number. In fact, we had to disconnect our home phone for about 3 days because it would ring all hours of the night and would fill up with messages.
Ryan Cutler, we're outside.
To you, Kyle Cheney, and we're really, if we're talking about Arizona, I guess Georgia as well, it was about 12,000 vote margin, and obviously here in Pennsylvania, a well-known battleground state. So it was targeting these battleground states, correct?
Yes, and it all very specific set of battleground states, too. It was ones with Republican-controlled legislatures where the Trump team hoped they could pressure or convince or persuade somehow these legislators to adopt alternative electors, these dueling electors, to say, you know, Donald Trump, we're going to send Donald Trump's electors to Congress, at least to be to compete with the ones that were certified by the governors in those states, which showed Biden winning. So it was very targeted states where they felt like they had a political advantage in the legislature.
Here's a comment from Bill, and Wendy, I'll put this to you because you're our lawyer on the panel here. Bill says, how is this not witness intimidation by the former president? And I'm thinking about the witness intimidation from other branch, like Giuliani, among others. Also, the fact that Ruby Freeman was told by the FBI that she needed to leave her house, which she did apparently for 2 months, feeling homeless as a result of that. Why couldn't she have been protected from people who were harassing and threatening her?
Well, I do think that there is going to be a lot of follow-up criminal investigation that's going to need to take place in light of all of the testimony that was presented at this hearing on the intimidation front, on the unlawful scheme to overturn the election and defraud the American public. So I do think that we're already seeing signs that the Department of Justice is looking into this. And so I think that that's going to be one critical follow-up piece, that there be some, you know, greater individual accountability. It is also critical, and one of the critical missions of this committee is, as you noted, that we fix the problems that allowed that allowed this to take place, that we had election officials who were not protected and were vulnerable to this kind of intimidation, and that we had an electoral system that was vulnerable to this kind of attack and manipulation. Those are going to also be critical follow-up pieces. So, yes, I think that there is a lot of evidence that the committee has been putting forward of, you know, criminal intent across multiple people that were involved in this scheme.
Kyle, here's an email from Richard. Our democracy is on life support because an openly anti-democratic GOP and will be with or without Trump. I might not have read that entirely correctly, but anyway, the idea that our democracy is at risk, and it seems that the Republican Party is working to undermine our democracy. Interesting poll over the weekend, ABC Ipsos poll, found that 6 in 10 Americans believe that Trump should be charged with a crime, also believe that the House committee hearing, is fair and impartial. Are we seeing a shift in point of view, in perspective?
It's a little early to say how this is going to shape public opinion. And I think the committee is pleased with the viewership they got of the first primetime hearing. We haven't seen a lot of details yet about the intake of the subsequent hearings. But I think they're happy with how their presentations have gone for the most part with all of the hearings so far. You know, is their goal to shift public opinion? I think they're hopeful that's at least one implication of everything they've put forward. I think they're also hopeful just to document and demonstrate to people a sort of airtight case, not just for potential criminal liability, but for everything we've talked about, those loopholes in our democratic processes that could be exploited in the future. So they and one thing, you know, we've pointed this out, but they're, for the most part, they're letting Trump's allies do the talking in the video testimony. Republican lawmakers, Republican fit operatives, many close to Trump, tell this story, and that's helping add to the credibility of the story they're trying to tell.
Well, and asking them, did you vote for Trump? Did you campaign for Trump? And we heard from. And I'm scrambling here because I have so many pieces of paper on my table here. But we heard from Rusty Bauer. We heard from the Georgia Secretary of State that, yes, they did vote for Trump.
Right. They wanted him to win. They acknowledged that yesterday. I think Rusty Bowers even said after his testimony that he'd still vote for Trump despite believing him to have led an illegal and unconstitutional effort to overturn the election, which that's a whole other question to ask about. But I think the bottom line is these are not, you know, people, these are not anti-Trumpers. These are not people who necessarily had an axe to grind with him or wanted to see him out of office. But they felt there was a line they couldn't cross. But those types of people, the committee believes, have more credibility with maybe a Republican viewership than just if you had a bunch of Democrats lining up to talk about it.
Here's a tweet from Minnie. These Republicans are putting party over country. Facebook comment from Frank. Some of us have to work during the day. They should have televised these hearings in prime time. We are talking about what we learned yesterday from day four of the House committee hearing investigating the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, and also the things that led up to it and the aftermath. Talking with Wendy Weiser, Vice President for Democracy at the Brennan Center for Justice, and Kyle Cheney, Senior Legal Affairs Reporter for Politico. And you can join us, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We were just talking about the fake electors, and so let me play another clip. This is law professor John Eastman, the kind of mastermind behind the fake electors. He's appearing before the Georgia State Legislature to advocate for a fake slate of electors, and this was shown as part of yesterday's hearing.
But you could also do what the Florida legislature was prepared to do, which is to adopt a slate of electors yourselves. And when you add in the mix of the significant statistical anomalies and sworn evidence and video evidence of outright election fraud, I don't think it's just your authority to do that. But quite frankly, I think you have a duty to do that, to protect the integrity of the election here in Georgia.
Wendy, is that illegal to come up with a slate of electors? Fake electors, I should say. No, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is illegal. And we've actually, there was a lot of testimony provided the earlier days that actually John Eastman himself not only was told, but actually admitted that this was illegal, that this would not be upheld by a court. Some of the other counsels that were involved in the scheme also admitted, and we heard today that another one of the campaign lawyers, Cheeseborough, knew that the electors didn't meet the requirements of state law and admitted that. So there was a fair amount of evidence that not only that this was unlawful, as we heard from former conservative Court of Appeals judge Michael Luttig, but that they knew it was unlawful all along and were told so, that and that didn't stop the effort.
Well, and to you, Kyle, picking up on that, I forget what state it was, but they were going to hide out in the state legislature overnight so that they could have their fake, I guess, votes, their fake elector votes counted.
Right. That was in Michigan, and you know, certain states had different requirements for, you know, look, the Trump campaign had helped orchestrate these meetings of false electors to sort of do a mock casting of ballots, because they felt like if a court subsequently blesses this, or if the state legislatures do come in and certify alternative electors, we want to show that we followed the processes as closely as we could so that we could maybe get these electors counted. You know, I think one of the points that gets overlooked, though, is had any state legislatures come in and actually certified alternate slates of electors, it's not necessarily clear that that in itself is a crime, but it would have been presented a much graver crisis, because you'd have two competing certified, essentially, slates of electors that would have created a much bigger problem on January 6th than these sort of false, you know, haphazard slates that, you know, like you said, were talking about hiding out in the capitals and didn't have any blessing whatsoever. So it could have been actually much more severe had any legislatures done that.
Do you agree with that, Wendy? We're almost up in a break here.
Absolutely. I mean, the attempt that would have caused, it would have still been illegal, but that would have caused a lot more confusion, put a greater sheen of legitimacy on this attempt to overturn the election, and, you know, that would have made it a much more dangerous situation.
And do you think the goal was to sow confusion?
I do think that sowing confusion serves the cause of trying to overturn an election. If there's enough confusion, those who are trying to sabotage the election can take advantage of that situation and try to switch things up.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about what we learned yesterday at the fourth day of the January 6th House Committee hearing, talking a lot about the intimidation of state election officials, of workers, and talking about the attempt to use fake electors to overturn the results of the 2020 presidential election. We've got a lot more to talk about after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We're talking about the January 6th Select Committee's fourth hearing focusing on the extraordinary pressure Trump and his allies put on state and local election officials to overturn the 2020 election results. Talking with Kyle Chaney, senior legal affairs reporter for Politico, and Wendy Weiser, vice president for democracy at the Brennan Center for Justice. Let me play another clip, and we've been talking about the fake electors, and this is RNC Chair Ronna McDaniel telling the January 6th committee in a taped deposition that President Trump called her and turned the call over to his counsel, John Eastman, to discuss the RNC helping the campaign with an alternate slate of electors.
What did the president say when he called you?
Essentially, he turned the call over to Mr. Eastman, who then proceeded to talk about the importance of the RNC helping the campaign gather these contingent electors in case any of the legal challenges that were ongoing change the result of any of the states. I think more just helping them reach out and assemble them. But my understanding is the campaign did take the lead, and we just were helping them in that role.
And Kyle, it sounds like she's saying that then President Trump took the lead, that he was orchestrating this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a key detail because I think what the committee wants to show is not just that, you know, Trump said, hey, help me stay in power, and then delegated everything to his deputies, his allies. He actually took a direct role in, you know, again, he connects John Eastman to the RNC. He's the one on the phone with Brad Raffensperger in Georgia or you know, talking specifically. He's calling up election officials in various states. Yes, he had Rudy Giuliani do a lot of the talking. He had John Eastman do a lot of the talking. But he was engaged in this process. And I think that's an important fact that the committee wants people to understand.
I'm reading here a couple of tweets, and I'll go back to you, Kyle, because you wrote about this, and this was Sean Riley. So that's Senator Ron Johnson's chief of staff, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Yes, that's
okay.
Right.
And he,
that is correct.
And he's tweeting to Chris Hodgson, who is Vice President Pence's chief of staff?
Legislative director.
Legislative director. Okay, sorry about that. So Sean Riley says, Johnson needs to hand something to the vice president. Please advise. Hodgson says, well, what is it? And Riley responds, alternate slate of electors from Michigan and Wisconsin because archivists didn't receive them. Hodgson says, do not give that to him. What is the significance of this tweet
sure.
conversation, Kyle?
This was one of the most interesting new pieces of evidence that the committee released during its hearing yesterday. And what they're showing is these were texts sent on the morning of January 6th, so minutes before Pence is about to preside over the counting of electoral votes. And Senator Johnson's office is attempting to arrange a handoff from the senator directly to Vice President Pence with these lists of false electors from Michigan and Wisconsin. And what that shows is just the lengths that Trump's allies were going to make sure Pence had in front of him the fake elector certificates. What I just noted this morning is that the archives, the National Archives, did actually have copies of these false certificates, but refused to send them to Pence because they were illegitimate. And so what Johnson's staff is doing is saying, oh, the archives never got this. Well, that's not the case. But they're trying to get them to Pence anyway, even though the archives did not view them as real certificates.
And they were texts, not tweets. Let me play another clip, and I will get you, Wendy Weiser, to respond. This is White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows' aide, Cassidy Hutchison, was asked in video testimony yesterday, who knew that the plot to use fake electors wasn't legal?
To be clear, did you hear the White House Counsel's Office say that this plan to have alternate electors meet and cast votes for Donald Trump in states that he had lost was not legally sound?
Yes, sir.
And who was present for that meeting that you remember?
It was in our office. It was Mr. Meadows, Mr. Giuliani, and a few of Mr. Giuliani's associates.
So, Wendy, I mean, is that a kind of smoking gun there?
Yeah, I think it's one of multiple smoking guns that they knew that this was illegal. They, you know, we also heard on other days the other things that they knew were illegal that they were doing, say from then Attorney General Barr. I do want to go back to the call from Ronna McDaniel, the chair of the Republican National Committee. That was, I think, also a very significant piece of evidence of President Trump's direct involvement in managing and the day-to-day of this scheme to replace the electors with false electors. And it adds on to other evidence of his direct involvement. But I think that was a key question going into these hearings. How much were they going to be able to tie this directly to President Trump? And that was very significant. And another key question was how much were they going to be able to demonstrate that they knew that this was unlawful, what they were doing, as opposed to just delusional. And we're also seeing, as you just heard, really quite a mountain of mm-hmm. evidence of that as well.
And Kyle, I mean, there are a number of audiences for these hearings. I'm assuming the Department of Justice is perhaps the biggest audience of all. The idea that if there were crimes committed, it is the responsibility of the DOJ to follow up and pursue them.
Right. I think the Select Committee, while, you know, emphasizing that their job is not, you know, criminal prosecution, has made a case that criminal activity occurred here, whether it's from Trump himself, knowingly pursuing this plan, even though he'd been told over and over again it was illegal, and using the bully pulpit of the presidency to try to lean on allies to comply. And I think they're showing all the different elements of what they're laying out is that people repeatedly were told this was not proper, this is not legal, you have no authority to do this, but we're doing it anyway or asking others to do it. And so I think the committee is hopeful that DOJ is watching this. Attorney General Garland has said he's watching this. There's actually been some tension between the two. The DOJ is concerned that it hasn't gotten enough of the Select Committee's transcripts and evidence that they want to use in potential prosecutions or ongoing prosecutions. But that's something they're hashing out right now.
Let me read an email from James and Wendy. I'll put this to you. James says, would your guest please discuss how Pennsylvania was a hotbed of the big lie action? The leader of this in Pennsylvania was Doug Mastriano. He led a meeting in Gettysburg trying to figure out how to support Donald Trump. Mastriano then met with the president at the White House where he contracted COVID. Mastriano then attended the January 6th rally march on the Capitol where he crossed police lines. I think there's some question about how far he got at the Capitol, and it should be added that he's the Republican candidate for governor of Pennsylvania. You wrote in some testimony before the January 6th committee about Pennsylvania and efforts as a result of this lie that continues to be told about voter fraud, how that is implicating what's happening in Harrisburg and our own legislature.
Yeah, well, I do think I'll start with the Mr. Mastriano, he is actually one of multiple candidates across the country that are running on this big lie on the attempt to overturn the 2020 election and the claim that that the election was improperly decided. And there's a real concern that heading into the 2024 election, there will be people in positions of power over election administration who believe in election denialism and who might not be willing to uphold the law and the Constitution the way we saw in 2020. And so this is a big problem across the country. Pennsylvania was not only there were multiple attempts to change the outcome in Pennsylvania, especially through the courts. Pennsylvania was the site of multiple lawsuits that, including ones that went up to the U.S. Supreme Court, that were one of 62 lawsuits that the Trump campaign and its allies actually brought trying to change the election outcome or demonstrate that there was somehow improprieties or fraud, and every single one of them failed. Many of them now with the attorneys being subject to sanctions for having brought such baseless claims. So this is Pennsylvania continues to be a place where, and actually, in addition to it being the center for 2020 and 2024, there have been efforts in Pennsylvania to pass new laws, not only to make it harder to vote, but to facilitate election interference in the future. So this is a broad threat that continues in Pennsylvania and in other states that were really the center of this activity.
And just to add that whoever is the governor of Pennsylvania, they get to appoint the Secretary of State, who, of course, runs elections. Just to kind of underscore what you were just saying, Wendy Weiser, let me play one more clip. And this is Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger's testimony before the committee yesterday. They played portions of former President Trump's infamous phone call to him, which went on for something like an hour. This was January 2nd, 2021, pressuring Raffensperger to alter the election results. Let's just play one little portion.
Why wouldn't you want to find the right answer, Brad, instead of keep saying that the numbers are right? So look, can you get together tomorrow? And Brad, we just want the truth. It's simple. And everyone's going to look very good if the truth comes out. It's okay. It'll take a little while, but let the truth come out. And the real truth is I won by 400,000 votes, at least. So what are we going to do here, folks? I only need 11,000 votes. Fellas, I need 11,000 votes. Give me a break.
And Kyle, I'm sure you've heard this multiple times, as have I, and it's still jaw-dropping.
It is, and especially when you had it, you know, being played back to the people, to Brad Raffensperger, who was sitting there watching this, you know, in front of you, and you know, you can see the head shaking and sort of the recognition of everything that was going on. And sometimes they haven't even aren't even aware of the context the committee is going to present around all of this too. So, you know, I think that call is the one that people are most familiar with. It's the one that's been reported the most thoroughly since January 6th, or even in the run up. But now is in the context of all these other efforts of leaning on state legislative leaders and election officials, and even Raffensperger's own chief investigator, who they've also played a clip of a recorded call with President Trump, leaning on her to find evidence of improprieties that didn't exist. So in the full context, it's even more jarring.
Is it legal, Wendy Weiser, to call up the Secretary of State and say, I need, you know, a certain number of votes, obviously one more than Biden had at the time?
There's actually a grand jury right now investigating this call in Georgia and the campaign to intimidate Georgia election officials to overturn the election. And so I do think that there's a real possibility that we're going to see some indictments coming out of that. This is obviously very damning, a damning call. And actually listening to the audio and having that played live was very chilling. And I think it makes it a lot clearer to the American people what was really being asked.
Well, you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Kyle, there's another hearing tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock, I believe. What's on the docket for tomorrow?
Sure. So this is one facet of what Donald Trump attempted to do in the pre-January 6th period was deputize or deploy his Department of Justice to legitimize some of his efforts to describe fraud or improprieties in the elections. And so, you know, he threatened to replace the entire leadership of DOJ to install someone who was more compliant with that. He wanted DOJ to issue a public letter urging state legislatures to come in and consider whether their elections had been conducted properly, including by citing some of these false claims of fraud. And, you know, DOJ never did that, in part because the leadership there threatened to resign en masse. But the committee wants to highlight this as just another aspect, another tendril of what Trump was doing at that moment to marshal the government in a way to support his attempt to overturn the election in a way that could have been extremely dangerous had it succeeded.
And Wendy, we're almost out of time here, but I thought it was interesting that Adam Schiff talked about a, quote, dangerous cancer on the body politic. You know, 50 or 49 years ago, John Dean talked about a cancer on the Nixon presidency. I'm assuming he chose that word for a reason.
Well, I think that we're seeing that this campaign of intimidation and this plot to overturn the election and now to weaken our system going forward has grown and was much broader than just the president and his closest campaign advisors. There were many people who were helping to facilitate it, and there are now many people who are part of the ongoing effort building off of these lies about the 2020 election to weaken the electoral system so that it will be more vulnerable going forward to this kind of attack. And so this is something that, you know, needs to be nipped in the bud and fixed before we do see a successful attempt in the future.
Indeed. Well, we have to leave it there. My thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times very much to walk us through what we learned yesterday. Wendy Weiser, thanks for joining us once again on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. She's Vice President for Democracy at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law. She founded and directed the program's Voting Rights and Elections Project. Kyle Chaney, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And he's senior legal affairs reporter for Politico. To replay this hour, many more hours of Radio Times, go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under programs. You can always download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder and Paige Murray Bessler. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us.